You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Suffering is an unavoidable part of life, but our guest today believes we can transform life's unexpected tragedies and mishaps into journeys of self-exploration. By shifting our perspectives on tragedy, we can find the magic that shines within some of our darkest moments. Our guest is Kelly Sullivan Walden, author of A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste, The Art of Transforming the Tragic into Magic. Kelly is an award-winning author of 10 books, a dream expert, a certified clinical hypnotherapist, inspirational speaker, workshop facilitator. Kelly holds a doctorate degree in interfaith studies. Her unique approach to dream work led her to consult with thousands of individuals, from Fortune 500 executives to celebrities to stay-at-home moms. She hosts the Kelly Sullivan Walden Show podcast and is the founder of DreamWork Practitioner Training, an online professional development program empowering people to incorporate dream work into their careers. Well, hello, Kelly, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
It's so great to be with you, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, and the timing couldn't be more interesting at 2 days after a fateful election, which is when we're taping this conversation, and now we're going to talk about how a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Maybe you can help us settle down around what feels to a lot of us to be a great tragedy in the election of Donald Trump.
Oh, I am with you, and it's funny because when I heard the news on the night of the election, as I went to sleep, I knew it seemed the way things were going that he was going to make it, and I heard myself say, "Well, Kelly, you're the author of A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste. You can handle this." I'm like, "Oh, that's true." The book is, instead of a regular table of contents, it's really just my nitty-gritty list. It's all the things that, in spite of my kind of Pollyanna upbeat outlook, I've gone through a lot of stuff. And I kind of wrote that book to tell people, you know, I have gone through a lot. I know what I'm speaking about. I'm not a Pollyanna. I feel like I'm actually really grounded. And I do have a positive outlook, and how I'm using that during this time, because my heart has been broken. I was devastated, and I still am. But I've developed this formula based on primarily the work that I've done just on my own self, and then on working with clients, but also being kind of dubbed the nightmare whisperer. I'm somebody who has worked with more nightmares than should be humanly possible, my own, and people come to me when they have difficult dreams. And I began to notice a theme in the way that I was working with people and their nightmares that related to their dreams, but also how very similar that same work was when people were going through a difficult crisis in their waking dream, because we're dreaming all the time. And I consolidated it all into this four-part kind of a formula for getting through, because I think some of us, I think if we divide the human race into two categories, we could say that there are those of us who avoid the difficult feelings, who would rather be happy and buoyant all the time and kind of gloss over the more painful feelings. And then we have a big price to pay on the back end because what we suppress must express. And then the other half of the human race is very comfortable wearing their pain on their sleeve and has no problem wailing or crying or playing, being in that victim mode. And sometimes they get stuck, and we can get stuck in either role. And when we do that, we miss out on the entire human experience. So we need to feel the whole, we need to feel all of it in order to create true alchemy, which is important. And I know you're a fan of synchronicity. In order for us to live a more synchronicitous life, we have to be present. We can't have a backlog of pain that we're just sitting on or avoiding. So I created this thing called the Ogle formula, O-G-L-E, right. Which is a very weird word for, I mean, it kind of catches you off guard. Like, it's not that ogling isn't a good thing, or ogling isn't a good thing. It's kind of a perverted thing to do. But in a way, what I thought was, we have to really look at our difficulties in order to alchemize them. And the O-G-L-E stands for what to do. So this is what I did couple days ago, day after the election, when I was in the midst of my heartache. And if anybody's listening or watching, get out a piece of paper, get out a journal, and follow along with this formula. If you're upset about anything, it doesn't have to be the election. It could be your gardener didn't show up on time, or somebody just broke up with you, or your bank account's empty, or whatever's going on, whatever's difficult. Here's what to do. O stands for offensive. Give yourself permission to journal everything that is offensive, or this can be a conversation prompt with somebody that's holding space for you, and you can do this back and forth. So, for example, I'm just going to be really honest here about what was offensive to me on the morning of the election, or the finding out the results of the election, was we've got a president-elect that's a criminal, and that doesn't respect women, and that is, he's a liar and a cheater. And that person is at the helm of the ship. It's like the bad guys are winning. That was what I ogled. That's what is offensive. What happened to the goodness and humanity? My heart was broken around those things. So I let myself just journal and be in the presence of what is hurting me. What's offensive? What's offending me?
Yeah. So what is it that you would tend to resist if you weren't an ogler?
exactly. Normally you do, or you look too deeply at it and you fall in. But we got to look at it like there's a saying in A Course in Miracles: look at the crucifixion, but dwell not on it. So the O is us looking at it. But then once we get most of it out of our system, then we move to the G, and this is where it starts to get difficult. Because the G is for what's good about this, or what's potentially good. We can't know everything, but we start to look for what could be good about this. And I wrote, well, one good thing is that I'm still breathing. Even after this happened, there's still oxygen on the planet. The planet is still spinning. We're still orbiting. The sun is still out. Okay, life is still going on. And one thing I know about going through difficult times is every single difficulty, the person who's going through it, and in this case, me, I build resilience. I'm going to find some kind of resource I didn't know I had that's going to help me get through. So what's good is I know I'm going to build up some kind of a muscle, some kind of a strength in order to get through this, even if I don't know what that is. Another thing that's good in every difficulty is that it highlights what our values are. So I might not have really realized that I really stand for justice. It really matters to me that people be honest and transparent and that there be fairness. So I'm grateful. And what's good is that I have more of a feeling in my heart about what I stand for. So thank you, election, for putting that into really sharp relief, what might have been a little bit murkier. And what I also know, and this is harder to recognize as good, but in anybody that offends me, it's only offensive to me because it's kind of their ego grasping at some compensatory mechanism in them, because they're holding on to their own vitality, their own life. It's as if the other person is saying, I deserve to live. I deserve to be on the planet. I'm fighting for my life. And there's something about just being alive. Even if the person's life isn't anything I admire, I can admire the fact that somebody is fighting to be alive. Even if I don't like the way their life looks, I value life. So that's, I'm grasping for straws here, Paul.
So yeah, that's cool.
Before I go to the L, do you want to say anything about that?
Well, you know, it's kind of, I can totally relate to what you just observed, is that mm-hmm. it's just shocking to think that over 50% of the population was willing to
yes.
vote, you know, for their angry, disaffected emotions rather than for the future. You know, they sort of like,
right.
you know, and
right.
I understand that they're alienated. You know, the world is changing, and the world is changing fast. And a lot of people are feeling left behind because they
yes.
don't have an education, because they, you know, the manufacturing jobs are being automated, and they blame that
yes.
on the immigrants. You know, the whole thing, it's just a hard thing to accept that human species is basically good. I'm having a crisis of faith about
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Okay, so the L comes in, and the L is the most difficult part of the Ogle equation, but the L is where the alchemy happens, and the L is for the looking glass. It's looking at ourselves in the mirror. And for myself, I have to, and this is hard because we like to think that we're good people. We like to think that we are beyond reproach. But the truth is, all of humanity, from a dream perspective, everyone and everything in my dream is a part of myself. And that's for the dream I have at night, whether it's the angel or the devil. And it's also in my waking dream. Every single being, every single thing I see is a part of me. It's like, spot it, you got it. So there's some speck of what I see that I don't like in me. So when
right.
I see what you just said, I don't like that people seem to vote against their best interest. They voted out of fear. They didn't vote for their higher self. So in the looking glass, which is the mirror, have I ever done that? Absolutely. So when I think about from a dream perspective, I believe every dream can be interpreted through the lens of angel, ego, or caveman. So there's those three archetypes in all of us. The angel is our higher self, the part of us that can notice those synchronicities and those intuitive moments and follow that more subtle, higher vibration, and that is altruistic, that would give a stranger our last crust of bread if we thought they needed it more than we did. So this is in all of us. And then there's the ego that just wants to friggin' look good, that just doesn't want to look stupid and wants to, you know, wants to win, that has dreams about being late for class or showing up naked somewhere and being embarrassed. And the caveman part of ourselves is the part of us that just wants to friggin' survive. In dreams, this shows up by we're running from something, or we're fighting something, or we're dominating or trying to avoid domination. So in waking reality, the caveman part of me, and I think about this very primally, and this is going to sound insulting to anybody that's listening that did vote for Trump, but I think it's the part of ourselves that is very primal that voted for Trump, because he represents Big Daddy. So if we were all cavemen, cavewomen, it would behoove us to hang out with the person with the biggest club and the biggest, loudest voice, even if they were dumb as a rock, because
which
they would
he is.
Represent, right. They would represent survival. They would represent survival. And we're only thinking survival is very, 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 it's like, we're just looking at this moment. It's myopic. So we're just looking, for sure. Is this going to be good for my bank account? Are my people going to survive? And that's it. We're not looking at anybody else. We're not looking out there. And have I ever done that? So we're in the looking glass. I sure have. There's been moments where my life has been at stake, at least a dozen. And in those moments, I wasn't thinking altruistically. I was thinking about how am I going to survive? So I can relate, even though I like to come back to wanting to see the big picture. But there's a part of me in that. And I think the last thing I'll say on the looking glass is just the pain that I feel in my heart. There's multiple pains, but the big existential pain is when I feel separate, when I'm in, because I believe we are all in a unified field. And when we remember that there's just one of us here, like a big, beautiful diamond, and there's multiple facets, or we're one big tree and we're all different leaves on the tree. When I remember that, there's a peace that comes over me that gives me some sense of breath. Even if I don't like what's going on the other side of the tree, or I don't like that other facet of the diamond on the other side, I prefer my side, but I can see that we're connected. There's peace in that. Where I feel absolute despair in my body is when I feel like there's us versus them. Then it's chaos in here. So the looking glass puts me back into unity, and then it gives me something to do, which is the elevate, which is the last step. But I could see it happen. Yeah. The elevate is simply what is mine to do? What is my next elevated step? So if I'm the dreamer and I'm dreaming this reality, and I only have power over what I can do. I can't control what everybody else is going to do. But if I be the change I wish to see in the world, then that might have a ripple effect. So what is my elevated step? And from my perspective, I want to, even when I'm in despair, I want to think of the bigger picture. I want to have my inner cave woman, but I don't want her running the show. I have my fear, but I don't want my fear to have me. I want to choose deliberately to access more of the angelic part of my nature, even when it isn't convenient, even if it might cost me something.
You know, to me, I can totally relate to this elevate concept. To me, finding the intersection between my personal happiness and my witnessing what's going on in the world. In other words, finding a balance between some modicum of joy in the face of accelerating degradation or grieving over what I think we're losing. You know, that's the trick. I don't have that many years left. None of us do. Our lives are very short. And, you know, and the Earth is 4.3 billion years old. So our lives are just a flash in the pan. So how do we make the most of it going forward in the face of these crises and these tragedies?
Exactly.
And how do we be a healing force at the same time as finding some joy in our own, you know, personal life?
Right.
That's a trick.
Yes, that is the fine line that we're walking. I mean, we want to be in this world, but not of it. Can I just share one little story that's from the book that I feel like it really is popping for me today?
Sure.
So there's one of the stories, I think it's the third or the fourth chapter, it's called My Breast Friend. So my best friend was going in to have, she had a lump in her breast and needed to have a biopsy done. And she asked me to come with her. So I was like, of course I'll come with you. Absolutely. So I'm in the operating room with her and I'm holding her feet because she asked me just to hold her feet, just moral support. So sorry, this is going to be a little gross. So take a breath, put a bubble around you.
Okay.
But
I'm ready.
So I'm holding onto her feet. The woman, the nurse, the doctor comes in with this giant needle and puts it into my friend's breast and she hits a nerve. And my best friend, she's kind of like jolts. And I feel the pain that she felt as I'm holding her feet. And it was so intense that I literally black out and I faint. and I'm holding onto her feet, like gripping them as I'm fainting, and I'm pulling her off the table with this giant biopsy needle in her breast. And I hear, "Let her go. Let," like, and they're like slapping my arms. The nurse and the doctor are like trying to get me to let go of her. So, and I finally, I'm like, "God, who's the jerk that's holding on to her?" And I realize it's me. Oh my God. I finally let go and they shoo me out of the room. And eventually my friend's fine. But the reason why this was important to me was because I was wanting to be in this with her. In like, I'm in the trenches with you. I'm like, you're not going to feel the pain all by yourself. I'm going to feel it with you. And I joined her in her pain so much so that I almost pulled her under. I almost made it worse. So the, to me, this is this, I thought about this today because so many people I know, and including myself, are heartbroken and grieving. And I thought, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a beneficial presence here, but I also don't want to pull everybody down and make it harder. So how do I grieve with them without adding more darkness to the darkness?
Yeah, and I suspect that that's an extra challenge for you, because the sense I got about you from reading the book is that you're a very dramatic person. You're a very emotional person. You know, you call a dog your soulmate. You know, it's like, oh my God, wow, this person's totally got an excess of empathy. If that's possible, that was
so
the impression
true.
I got.
It's so true. But I was thinking, if I could do a do-over with the breast friend story, I would have been there holding her feet, but I would have had my connection to the divine, my connection to God would have been...
Maybe close your eyes.
Yes. I would have been so strong in that space that I could have maybe felt her pain, but I wouldn't have toppled over into it. I would have been solid in my own connection. So to me, that's how to do what we're going through. We have to double down or double up on our spiritual practice, on our meditation, on our gratitude, on our remembering that we are a part of good, orderly direction. There is so much more beauty going on than there is that is not working. We have to remember that and get solid in that. And then hold the feet of the people that are really struggling, but not double it down and maybe cause more pain. I mean, if she had fallen all the way off the table with that needle in her breast, like, it could have been so much
could have
worse.
Been bad, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, I really relate to what you're pointing at here, in that I was at a meeting, a men's meeting the other night, and I was saying, mm-hmm. You know, it's this whole thing, and everybody was in mourning.
Right.
And I said, you know, this whole thing is just reminding me that I just want to be more spiritual. And you have some spiritual yes. concepts in your book. One of them is called Amor Fati,
yes.
which can be translated love your fate, but I like to translate it love your destiny.
Yes.
But you write that it's an attitude in which everyone is, in which one sees everything that happens to them, including suffering and loss, as good or at the very least necessary. Now that is a big picture attitude.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to remember that when you're feeling like crap, but you know.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder.
It's true. I mean, it's kind of, this is why I love being a dreamer, and I love teaching people to pay attention to their dreams, that my dream work practitioner training and the dreamifesting workshop. I mean, I love it because it, in order to do it, we have to be in this world, but not of it. We have to think of something bigger. And to me, dreams are whenever we pay attention to our dreams and decode them, it puts us in a larger field of reality. It just switches our brain waves. We go from kind of the beta waves to alpha and theta, which gives us access to, oh yes, I'm in a friendly universe. Even Einstein said that, in spite of, oh my God, he lived through the Holocaust. And like, I mean, there was so, like, horrible things going on. And he even said, this is a friendly universe. There's a word called pranoia. Have you heard of this word?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's appropriate here. It's the opposite of paranoid, where you assume people are out to get you and you assume you're in an unfriendly universe that's trying to hurt you or bring you down. But pranoia is where you look at the world like it's got a gift for you. It's on your side, even if it's not obvious, even if it's in disguise. So I think, you know, some people during the darkest of times find their raison d'être, their reason for being alive. So it could be the people that are the most heartbroken right now, they're on the verge of finding a gift, a skill, their reason for being alive. They're going to bond more deeply with the people that they resonate with. We just have to look for it. It's not, you know, and it's not about being airy-fairy. It's not about being out of touch. It's about being in touch with the opportunity, not wasting the crisis. I mean, a crisis is a terrible thing to have, but it's even worse to have the crisis and then waste it. Like if we're going to go, I always say if we go down to the bottom of the ocean floor because there's been some shipwreck, there's treasures at the bottom of that ocean. Don't come up empty-handed. So we have to look for the blessings, find them and grow them. And that doesn't mean that we don't take political action. It doesn't mean that we don't, you know, that we don't do something in the physical realm. Of course, this is the first year I ever got on the phones and I was part of the phone banks for the Harris-Walz campaign. So, you know, doing something physical, of course, but I think 99% of the work is done metaphysically.
Right. Hey, well, we have just about run out of time and there's so much more that we could explore. There's so much in your book and so much of it's very interesting. Your personal stories about when you were a stripper, you know, an actress, a struggling actress.
I
love that.
I
love
that. About that.
I love the openness of all of that and the vulnerability. But unfortunately, we can't talk about it anymore because we've run out of time. But I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website so they can go there and find more information about your books. You've got 10 books about your work, about your podcast, etc. And that is www.kellysullivanwalden.com. And it's just like it sounds, it's all one word, kellysullivanwalden.com. And for those who may have tuned into Pathways late today, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or via free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Kelly Sullivan Walden, author of A Crisis is a Terrible Thing to Waste, The Art of Transforming the Tragic into Magic. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. But even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's divination.com. as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Kelly Sullivan Walden and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation. We'll be right back.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio